you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
A reminder on Fresh Air with Terry Gross today, Susan Stamberg, one of the originals with NPR, as Terry observes, it's closing in on the 50th anniversary of NPR. Bill Siemering was the first programming director for NPR and really established the sound of public radio in so many ways. He'll also be with Terry. That's coming up at noon, right here on KPCC. We turn our attention to the freeways, in which we often think of associated with the freedom to move around Southern California. And we sort of take that for granted when we're not in the midst of heavy congestion. And then when we're there, you know, sitting, barely moving on the freeway, of course, it's a source of one of our major complaints about Southern California life. And that is the heavy traffic that so constricts movement here in Southern California. But there's much more to the story than that, including the history of how our freeways got constructed where they are. It is a grid in many ways. But some of the decisions about where freeways weren't built and other places where they were also factors into the cost of real estate and the ability of residents to organize and to exert clout to stop construction. Joining us to talk about that history and what the effects of freeway construction have been on a number of Southern California communities is UCLA Professor of History and Chicano Studies, Eric Avila. He's an LA historian and author of The Folklore of the Freeway, Race and Revolt in the Modernist City. Professor Avila, good to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
So let's talk about freeway construction. First of all, you know, much of it comes in the 1950s and 60s as the population has boomed in Los Angeles and people are looking for efficient ways of being able to get around in a very car culture centric city. You know, take us back there and some of the decisions. How were the routes laid out?
Well, it was a process that the California Division of Highways had different methods, all of which they described as empirical and objective methods. Usually cost efficiency was the primary determinant. But if you actually go back to the 1930s, there were a number of federal surveys that categorized neighborhoods primarily by their social composition. And neighborhoods that were poor, racially and ethnically diverse, were usually considered to be blighted neighborhoods or slum neighborhoods. And according to the many directives of federal policy in the middle of the 20th century, highway construction was used as an instrument of slum clearance and clearing out blighted communities. So in many ways, freeways were built targeting neighborhoods that were racially, ethnically diverse, working class, poor neighborhoods, whereas other neighborhoods did not bear the impact of highway construction in the same way.
Do you see some good example of sort of gerrymandered configurations of highway routes to avoid going through certain neighborhoods where the cost would be high or the pushback would be severe?
So, yeah. You know, for those of you who know the area of Beverly Hills, the West Side, Santa Monica Boulevard was supposed to be the two freeway. It was supposed to extend from Echo Park, where it ends now, and run all the way to the ocean at Santa Monica Bay. But in the early 1960s, the people of Beverly Hills organized in protest against that state plan for the two freeway. And they used their connections in City Hall, and they were successful in their effort to stop that project. That's a good example of what we describe as a freeway revolt that was primarily typical of white middle class or affluent neighborhoods in cities throughout the nation, where these communities had the wherewithal, they had the political clout, they had the connections and the wealth to stop federal or state highway plans. And that's what happened in Beverly Hills.
How do you tease that apart from the cost of the real estate itself? Because often I assume that goes hand in hand in working class communities. The eminent domain acquisition is going to be much less than it would be, for example, building a freeway down Santa Monica Boulevard, even, you know, in the 1950s LA at that point. So how do you determine how much of this is community opposition versus the simple cost of constructing a freeway on that route?
Well, it was definitely a combination of both. You know, from my perspective, there were protests in other parts of the city as well. And the fact was that, you know, some people's voices were heard and others people's voices were not heard. And that did have a lot to do with the wealth that was pertinent to those particular communities. But it also had to do with connections and who had more connections and whose political voice was louder. So there were protests all over the city, but very typical of American history in this time. It was the white and wealthy communities that had the wherewithal to stop these plans.
Just a few blocks from our studios here in Pasadena is a great example of this, where the 134 and 210 interchange was built. Took a number of Black-owned homes that were in that area and created a kind of symbolic break between the historically African-American northwest of Pasadena and the downtown and other business districts and wider communities of Pasadena. And I remember on multiple occasions talking with Pasadena's first African-American mayor, Loretta Thompson Glickman, who grew up in the northwest and was deeply had very strong feelings against what the freeway had done to the historic Black community of Pasadena. I'd be interested in hearing from you, wherever you are, where the freeway has had a significant impact, what has it been on your local community? We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. You can also post on the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, tweet at AirTalk, post on the AirTalk Facebook page as well. Also joining us from Long Beach City College, Associate Professor Gilbert Estrada, who writes on Southern California history. Professor Estrada, good to have you with us today.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So explain how this has played out in certain communities, what the effect of the construction of the freeway has been on the cohesiveness or economically on those communities.
Yeah, sure. You know, if I could, I wanted to add just a little more to what Eric said about the kind of the impact and freeways. I want to get a better idea of just how many freeways are in certain areas, and in this case, including East Los Angeles. In Boyle Heights alone, there's six freeways, right? And there's seven freeways in East LA area. You had the Pomona 60 freeway, the Hollywood 101 freeway, the Santa Ana 5 freeway, the Golden State 5 freeway, the Santa Monica 10 freeway, the San Bernardino 10 freeway, and then just a little off is the Long Beach 710 freeway. So we're talking about a massive group that's really unprecedented in North America, of one community to have so many freeways in a small little area.
And two major interchanges as well.
Major interchanges alone, like the East LA interchange alone, yeah. 135 acres, is originally three times as big as originally planned. As they started building it, they started realizing like the entire hub of the Southern California freeway system is the East Los Angeles interchange. And that's it. And it happens to be in an area of color. One more thing I want to add before I talk about the health impacts is when you look at the land use as a whole in the city of LA, less than 4% of the land used by freeways in the county of Los Angeles, it's less than 1%. Now, if you look at just in Boyle Heights, 12% of the total land use is actually used by freeways. In East Los Angeles, it moves up to 19% of the land use is by freeways. In unincorporated East Los Angeles, 32% of the land area is used by streets and freeways. In Boyle Heights, over 70% of the land is used by freeways and industrial zoning. In South LA, about two-thirds of the area is just used for automotive use. And then really, if you look at the master plan that everybody's driving on right now, it's really the 1958 master plan. Only about 61% of that was ever built by 2001. The original plan was for 1,575 miles. But in East Los Angeles, over 100% of every freeway planned was built. So, I mean, there's obviously a quantitative and qualitative discrepancy on where freeways were built.
Well, where would be, because it seems like, you know, much of this also is driven by truck traffic, by commerce, because trucks very heavily use those freeways that go through the interchanges there in the Boyle Heights, East LA area. What were there other places that were contemplated for having those big interchanges and accommodating all the truck commerce? Or did we just not in that original plan anticipate the volume of goods that would be moving through the area via truck?
Well, I think definitely we did not anticipate. We planned, California was the first state in the union to have a master plan that looked 25 years into the future. But you hit the nail on the head when you really, when you look at the plans from the, you know, the 40s, 50s, and 60s, the number one goal is to move goods and to, and to move product, right? It was really not so much to move people. And this brings in the Port of LA and Long Beach complex. So this whole thing is really set up to for industry. So when you look at a slightly down the road and you look at the 710 freeway, right? There's a reason why the goods are coming up from the Port of LA and Long Beach up the 710 freeway and then through the switching yards in the City of Commerce, East Los Angeles area. And that really is the linchpin of this whole entire system of moving goods. And unfortunately for the people who subsidized the system with their health. But I mean, as you mentioned, really, I mean, this thing is about goods. This is about commerce and it's about moving money. And again, it's unfortunate for some of the people who happen to live close along these freeway routes.
We're talking with Long Beach City College professor Gilbert Estrada, who's written on Southern California history. Again, I'd like to hear from you. If you live in an area where it changed dramatically after the freeway was constructed, I'd like to hear about it. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Now, I remember as a kid what a big deal it was when major freeways opened. I remember when the San Diego 405 freeway was completed and how much excitement there was about that. I remember the Santa Monica freeway when it was completed and people talking about what that meant. But of course, for the people that were living in that corridor, had a significant effect on their lives. 866-893-KPECC. We'll be back in just 1 minute on Air Talk. It's Air Talk on KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. Good to have you with us. Let's take a listener call from Jason in Inglewood. You're on Air Talk. Jason, describe for us what freeway in your communities meant.
The 105 in South LA. So I remember when I was a little kid, I guess in like the 80s, they had like these big dunes. There was this area where there was these big dunes and guys would like ride horses and do like motocross and stuff there. And, you know, there were homes in the area too. And I know when I was getting older, you know, people were fighting against it, but they ended up losing. And the 105, you know, we have that now. And those dunes and that whole, like, outdoor area there is gone now.
Yeah, yeah. And also the separation that the 105 created between communities there, because that's, you know, it's such a wide freeway and with the Green Line going down the middle of it and all, that changed things too, didn't it, Jason?
Yeah, it cut straight through. There were a lot of homes in that area, and it cut straight through there. It just, like, you know, cut off neighborhoods. There are neighborhoods that don't exist anymore because of that freeway.
Jason, I really appreciated that. Of course, the most recently constructed major freeway in Los Angeles County. Jason in Inglewood with us. Ray in the West Adams District said, when my family first moved here from Louisiana, there was a location where the 10 was constructed. It relocated lots of us. With Venice recognizing its own shortcomings, will there be an official recognition of my family and other African Americans who were relocated? And Ray, as you probably know, in Manhattan Beach, there's just the issue of Bruce's Beach, where the family had owned an African American resort on the oceanfront, and that was taken away from the family under trumped up reasons because the city didn't want African Americans coming and having recreation in their community. Let me add to the conversation Joe Linton, editor for Streets Blog LA. Joe, thank you very much. Appreciate your being with us. Are there some ways that local transportation officials are trying to redress or deal with these huge community impacts?
Well, I think a lot of Angelenos think that this sort of, you know, racist freeway building was really in the past. But I think that the truth is that Metro and Caltrans are still doing, you know, massive multi-billion dollar widening. I mean, drivers know in Burbank and in Norwalk areas of these, you know, multi-billion dollar widenings of the 5 freeway. Metro's gotten started on a $6 billion widening of the lower 710 freeway, which is going to displace lots of people, 300 plus parcels in Compton and Long Beach. And lately, I've been reporting a bunch on the plans to widen the 605 and the 5 freeway, which is Metro is looking to take out hundreds of homes, especially in the city of Downey.
Yeah. So that's something contemplated. And the problem, of course, is significant congestion on those freeways. How much of that is commercial truck traffic being a significant part of the problem, Joe?
Well, I think there's this myth that says if we widen roads, widen lanes, widen freeways, that we'll get less congestion, when what we've seen since the, you know, academics have studied it since the 60s and earlier, is that the more freeways you build, the more congestion you get. So, the Metro and Caltrans spent $1.6 billion widening the 405 near UCLA Westwood, and you know, within a year, there was more traffic on that freeway, but there was more congestion and no improved speed. So, I think that if we can build rail, if we can make places that are safe to walk and bike, if we can beef up bus service, we can give Angelenos different choices. So folks aren't trapped on that freeway.
Joe, you know, my sense, it's only anecdotal, is that traffic in Orange County on the 5 is significantly better over the last decade or whatever it's been since the widening of that freeway. Is that not the case?
I haven't studied that. What I would say is that there's likely more traffic on that freeway, and that's more global warming. That project took out homes and businesses. I think it's even if there is some capacity benefit and jobs benefit, there are huge prices, both, you know, in cost to the state transportation budgets and in pollution in people's lives who live near there.
Gloria in Monterey Hills, you're on Air Talk.
Boy, have you struck a nerve, Larry. I now live in Monterey Hills. However, I can tell you that the direct effects of the vivisection of East Los Angeles by the San Bernardino Freeway, the Pomona Freeway, the 710 Freeway, but all of these had a direct effect to me. To begin with, I had friends and family in East Los Angeles that had to move to Pico Rivera, to Montebello, to in some cases to the Derry Valley, as it was called then. Now it's Cerritos. We just had to spread out because it was eminent domain all the way, and we were being paved over. And that's what happened. East Los Angeles was vivisected by all of this construction. I can also say that as a result of that, I know that at that time, or about that time, East Los Angeles was looking for cityhood. It even had a slate of young men, none of the women at that time, but young men that were going for possible council seats in East Los Angeles. And there was even an election. And I knew a family that would have had a young man. Now he's a senior citizen, but a lawyer that was vying for a seat on that potential city council. And he won it. But the city didn't win cityhood. So erase that. The fact that the 710 freeway was truncated at Valley Boulevard was absolutely no surprise to me, because I understand and respect the power of the community in South Pasadena to have blocked it all the way for decades. And I respect them for it. I just know that East Los Angeles did not have the voice, power, the information to do anything about it at the time.
Gloria, you sound so knowledgeable about all this, including the politics. Have you ever held public office?
No.
You sound like you're so well-versed in this. Gloria, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us. Bruce in View Park in Southwest L.A. said, I grew up watching the fight over the 105 freeway in South Central Los Angeles in 1960. That side went on for nearly 30 years. We lived right across the street from where the freeway is now. My father used to look out from our front porch and see acres and acres of land. That's Bruce in View Park. And Mark in Beverly Hills said, my parents lived in Beverly Hills. They were against the Beverly Hills Freeway and accepted their fate. The railroad, from what I understand, was also part of the big political structure. I want to thank our guests for being with us, Eric Avila from UCLA, Long Beach City College's Gilbert Estrada, and from Street Blog LA, editor Joe Linton.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.